This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
Rights groups have accused Tanzania's President John Magufuli of creating a hostile environment for any opposing voices.
That's Rael Ombor reporting from Nairobi. Details coming up also. French President Emmanuel Macron has announced the first major revision of the CFA, franc, the Financial Community of Africa currency. And the United States has recalled its envoy from Zambia after the country's President Edgar Lungu demanded his removal. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, French President Emmanuel Macron has announced that his government will loosen its supervision of the CFA franc in West Africa. It is the first major revision in the currency former French colonies in Africa have used since 1945. The changes begin with a new name for the currency that will be used in Benin, Burkina Faso, Ivory Coast, Mali, Niger, Senegal, and Togo. It now will be called the ECO. Journalist Nico Pinot in Paris says, overall, however, he says the changes will not be dramatic. He spoke with my colleague Kate Pound-Dawson a short time ago.
Yeah, so the CFA currency was introduced in 1945, right after World War II by France and by the time its former colonies. And the name by the time was France CFA, which was French colonies in Africa. So the idea was to keep that area and the currency in the same area than the franc but back in the time. And to still get, obviously, kind of control of what they were doing. And after decolonization in 1960, the name remained, but it became African Financial Community. But still, France was really involved with, you know, the daily operations of that currency.
So what are the motivations for changing the CFA? It's been used now, as you mentioned, 75 years. What are the why change?
Well, that's an argument that we can maybe talk after, but a little bit is going to change, honestly, because right now what's going to have is France is still going to have a huge involvement in the daily operation. It is true that right now the African countries won't have to put 50% of their reserves into the French treasury. That is true, but still, France is backing the new currency, ECO, okay? And Emmanuel Macron, he wanted to make a symbol that, you know, the French CFA is part of the past colonialism, and we need to change, we need to move forward. It's the 21st century. So that's why he really wanted to have this symbolism of changing the name of the currency. But main criticism about that is that the new ECO currency still is going to have a huge involvement of France in the daily operations.
Now, does it have any risk, these changes?
No, and that's the point from Ivory Coast President Alassane Ouattara. For him, the fact that France is backing the currency, the new one ECO and the former one CFA franc, brings stability to the currency. And unlike countries in the region like Nigeria or Ghana, countries that have their own currency, this bloc, the ECOWAS bloc, the French one speaking French and having the CFA franc, they've been pretty stable beside the crisis. So that's a huge argument for them.
Does the peg stay the same? It's still at about 655 CFA to the French franc.
Yeah, that's the argument that for many people, people criticizing the decision, ECO is like the old CFA franc, because conversion is the same. You're absolutely right. It's exactly the same amount.
And let me correct something. It's not actually pegged to the French currency. It's pegged to the euro now, right? Because there is no freestanding French currency. It's the euro.
No, it disappeared in 1999.
That was reporter Nicole Pinot speaking with VOA's Kate Pound-Dawson. China has cemented its position as the most African country's biggest economic and political partner. It's a complex and nuanced relationship. This week, we are presenting a series of reports by VOA's Darren Taylor from Johannesburg. Today, he looks at how Chinese technology and funding is helping Africa to broaden its access to the internet. In Ethiopia, for example, China offered the largest loan in the history of telecommunications in Africa, more than $3 billion. But critics say China's communist rulers are exporting a system to suppress dissent and control what people see online.
In 2008, Eugenio Gagliardone was talking with a telecommunications official in Addis Ababa.
When we were done, I started walking around and, you know, that was the first time that I've been to that building. Opening a couple of doors, I noticed that the vast majority of people in this office were not Ethiopian engineers, but they were Chinese engineers.
That led the media studies academic at Johannesburg's Wits University to investigate China's growing involvement in Africa's information technology sectors. He has studied the often heard view that China enters Africa with the ideas and the technology and implements them as it sees fit.
This is actually not the case. I've seen a lot of leverage on the side of mostly African governments to develop very specific ideas of information society that emerge from the local context.
Gagliardone explains that in countries where citizens have less democratic rights, China provides the authorities what's needed to restrict the internet. However, should countries where citizens enjoy more freedom want an unrestricted internet, China's experts install exactly that.
China has shown a great ability in fitting into the specific socio-technical, socio-political structure that are found in each individual country.
But an analyst at the International Media Freedom Group, Reporters Without Borders, or RSF, Cedric Alviani, thinks Beijing is trying to export what he calls its oppressive internet model.
They are promoting what they call the sovereignty over internet, which is a concept that allows a country's government to have any right they want to have over the internet in their country.
In China, the government censors the internet and blocks Western social media sites. It monitors citizens' activity online and has wired much of the country to a facial recognition and public monitoring system. It says the system prevents crime and terrorism, but critics say it's used to track dissidents. Chinese authorities say they manage communication to ensure stability and development. Alviani says the Chinese Communist Party's internet policy at home is to shut down criticism. Gagliardone has spent years studying Beijing's internet blueprint.
If we look at the content of the policy, it's simply saying each country should decide for itself about which type of internet is the best for its population, for its ideas of development and so forth. So it doesn't say China should be the example, but obviously it could be.
South African media studies professor Herman Wasserman says it's known that Beijing has provided internet surveillance technology to some African states. Media investigations have, for example, exposed how technicians from China's Huawei Corporation allegedly helped Ugandan and Zambian security forces intercept the communications of government opponents.
There have been instances where that has been noted, where signal blocking equipment, etc., were procured from the Chinese. It's very alarming, it's very worrying, but again, one has to ask the impetus, does that come from China or does that come from African governments? And so I think African governments...
Gagliardone says authorities in democratic countries also monitor the internet, not for social control, but to detect crimes such as child pornography and especially terrorist activity. He says when it comes to internet surveillance, African countries publicly line up with the terrorism concerns of Western powers.
We have seen seen a tendency in many countries in Africa towards restriction of freedom of expression or like blanket internet shutdowns, using the anti-terrorism agenda as a justification for restricting the information space.
Gagliardone says Western donors promised to fund information technology in Africa as far back as the 1990s, but never delivered. So China has stepped into the gap. The result, he says, has been relatively cheap internet access in many parts of the continent. Freedom of information advocates say Africans must maintain pressure on their governments to keep the internet open as an essential tool for social and economic development. I'm Darren Taylor for VOA News in Johannesburg.
Ivory Coast authorities have issued an arrest warrant for presidential candidate and former rebel chief Gulilom Soro, prompting him to divert his plane to another country today instead of returning home. Soro, who served as prime minister from 2007 to 2012, was trying to return home after 6 months abroad. The public prosecutor on Monday said Soro is accused of preparing an attack on state security, but gave no details. He's also accused of embezzling public funds. Soro's supporters took to the streets Monday to protest the arrest warrant. Ivory Coast suffered a civil war that ended in 2007. Soro helped President Alassane Ouattara come to power after a violent 2010-2011 election. Soro later fell out of favor with Ouattara. He's the first candidate to declare his candidacy for president. Rights groups say Tanzania's government has reduced the democratic space in the country by arresting critics and shutting down news outlets. Activists say two incidents in the past week have heightened the climate of fear. Raila Mbor reports from Nairobi.
Tanzanian activist and journalist Bolan Getty was freed Tuesday, a day after he was abducted in Dar es Salaam. He told a local media house his kidnappers identified themselves as security officials who questioned him about a wide range of issues, most of them political. Meanwhile, human rights activist Tito Bagoti was arraigned in court Tuesday, charged with using a computer program to steal about $7,500 or 17 million Tanzanian shillings from various individuals. Anne Henger, executive director of the Legal and Human Rights Center in Tanzania, said the charges are fabricated.
The alleged artist made an app with his colleague, friend, which helped or assisted them to get the 17 million. Tito is not an IT expert. He can't do that. What we know, Tito is very active on social media. He has been tweeting a lot of things, challenging what is happening, especially on the freedom of expression.
Rights groups have accused Tanzania's President John Magufuli of creating a hostile environment for any opposing voices. In October, Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch, in two separate reports, said the government's repression of human rights defenders, the media, and opposition parties had intensified since 2015. Jonas Sendondo of the Tanzania Human Rights Defenders Coalition said the situation for activists and journalists is becoming worse.
We have been the voice of the voiceless, and so when the voice of the voiceless is being targeted, now that creates a lot of fear, because initially we didn't even receive any kind of threat, but nowadays they are targeting us. So they know, because they all know that once anything happens, once any violation happens, THRDC, Tanzania Human Rights Defenders Coalition, is going to be the first organization to air that violation out. So we are the target now. So the situation is not the operating environment is not like we used it to operate before. Basically, we are in fear.
Mudoki Mumo is a sub-Saharan Africa representative for the Committee to Protect Journalists. She says Tanzanian authorities have greatly narrowed the space in which journalists can operate.
This has happened in a number of ways. We've seen the enactment or the implementation of restrictive legislation. For example, the online content regulations that were put into place last year that make it very expensive to be a blogger. We've seen the use of arrests and detentions. In some cases, some of these are brief.
But one Tanzanian journalist critical of the president, Eric Kabendera, has been in prison since July, charged with economic crimes for which he cannot get bail. Meanwhile, freelance journalist Azory Gwanda has not been seen since November 2017. Momo says the public wants answers.
Where is Azory? And his family needs this. His colleagues need this. The Tanzanian journalistic community needs this, because for as long as Azory is missing, there's always the question of, could this happen to me? And then also the additional question of, if something happens to me, is my government willing to investigate and to provide answers to my family and my colleagues?
Earlier this year, Tanzania's foreign minister said Gwanda had died, but later retracted that statement. Raya Lombor for VOA News, Nairobi.
South Africans have expressed mixed feelings on this festive season. The recent power cuts, current state of the economy, and rising unemployment will mean a gloomy Christmas for many. However, others say they are ready to drink and dance their sorrows away at least once before their struggles resume again in 2020. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
The festive season in South Africa is usually marked by shopping, partying, drinking alcohol, and special meals. However, many South Africans say this year is different. The struggling economy has left many families with very little extra cash to spend. Zano Zugo Nyamende, 25, recently graduated with a degree in business management from a South African university. With hundreds of graduates ahead of him still unemployed, worries of not getting a job next year are top in his mind, not Christmas.
What young people want now is employment, and we want to hear things that are put in place for young people now.
Nobuhle Kombo is another sad graduate. She says not even Christmas can bring a smile on her face.
I've sent more than 100 CVs to emails, to face-to-face, to websites, to different employment hubs everywhere, and this year I haven't even received one interview call.
South Africa's unemployment rate this year rose to 29.1%. This was followed by a string of power outages due to failure by the country's power utility, Eskom, to provide enough electricity. This has had a devastating effect on many clothing and food outlets that usually make more sales during the festive season. Ryan Hawthorne, an economist at Acacia Economics, says there is only dim light at the end of the tunnel.
It isn't looking good. We're growing this year probably at about 0.5% or so. There are big risks at the moment. And for example, it's quite difficult to commit to a big mining investment if there's uncertainty as to power supply, for example. We've got very expensive ports, very inefficient ports. Similarly, in passenger transport, in freight transport.
However, not everyone is allowing the economic challenges to dampen their festive season spirit. Sitele Mazwi left the city with a load of groceries to celebrate Christmas with their in-laws in the countryside.
I'm just looking forward to the peace and quiet in the rural areas, listen to the birds, sit under the trees, gossip with other in-laws, and I'm excited.
Bongani Lunga says he has decided to shelve his problems for now and enjoy himself. His Christmas plans are complete.
Drinking movies, have some fun. That's all. Nothing more. I bought the shoes, skipper, and tickets. Like, you know, I've been eating bag and chips.
With only a few hours left before Christmas Day, shoppers are doing their last-minute shopping and travelers rushing to their holiday destinations so that come Wednesday morning, the party begins, at least for some. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
The United States has recalled its envoy to Zambia, Ambassador Daniel Fute, after the country's president, Edgar Lungu, demanded his removal. The ambassador came under fire after he expressed dismay at two men being jailed for 15 years for homosexuality last month and urged the government to review discriminatory laws. Futi said at the time that Zambia wanted diplomats with open pocketbooks and closed mouths, and warned of a decaying relationship between the two countries. That is when President Lungu made an official complaint against Futi, saying he did not want such people among Zambians. Lungu, in power since 2015, faces mounting complaints that he's cracking down on dissent and seeking to consolidate power ahead of an election in 2021. Zambia is one of the largest per capita recipients of American assistance in the world, getting around $500 million each year. It's Christmas time. Christmas shopping is in order. It's time to travel, to be around loved ones, prepare nice meals to complement the day. But Zimbabwe's depressed economy is keeping many citizens from fully taking part in the festivities. Reporter Kuzaza Nawash has more from Harare.
Tongai Makawa is the project manager and co-founder of a youth organization called Magamba Network. He says this year's festive season does not promise much.
The prospects are low because of where we're coming from. We're not coming from a situation of normalcy. We're coming from a situation of no power, rampant water shortages, no medicine in hospitals, no doctors. So you find that even to celebrate, it becomes quite problematic in that just normalcy is non-existent.
Munyaradzi Dodo is the editor of Open Pali, an online publication that covers parliament business and political developments in the country. He blames the government, especially Finance Minister Mthuli Ncube and the ruling party, for failing to revive the economy.
I think it's going to be a very gloomy festive season. People have no money, people can't travel. It kind of feels like the Grinch really did steal Christmas this year. I don't know who the Grinch this year is, but it could very well be Mthuli's 2% tax, or Mthuli himself, or ZANU-PF, or the policies that the government has been implementing.
The festive season is also a time to reflect on the closing year. This year has been characterized by a new 2% transaction tax and an economic decline, which have eroded the people's buying power as salaries remained stagnant. The economic woes are worsened by electricity cuts, shortages of fuel and cash, and rocketing inflation. Given the problems, family man Blessing Wungwe says there is not much to celebrate.
To be honest, there is no festive season coming up. We are just all gliding through the days because there's nothing to celebrate. Life is just unbearable. There is no festive season.
Christmas across the globe presents an opportunity for travel, time off work, and being with loved ones. In Zimbabwe's past, that was the case, but this year, people will have subdued holidays. And then, for many families, January brings fresh demands for school fees and school supplies. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe from Harare.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Nashwan Kali, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports, or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.